This is Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Darren Korb. He's a composer and the audio director of Supergiant Games. And Darren, wow, it's really great to have a chance to talk to you.
Happy to be here.
Well, you've got a game in the works, Pyre, and I know you can't really give too much away, but I really appreciate you giving us at least a little bit of a hint of it, because you and the team were showing it off at the RTX convention in Austin, and it sounds like it was getting a really incredible reception.
Yeah, you know, from what I hear, I wasn't able to attend myself, but I heard it went great and people were really enthusiastic about it. And, you know, we had lines of people waiting to play, and everybody seemed glad that they waited. nobody was too bummed at the end. So, and yeah, we had kind of that was my experience at PAX East when we showed the game for the first time. People seemed to be pretty excited about it, and we got some really good media response and coverage and everything. And so, yeah, it's, you know, fingers crossed. Let's just hope people continue to respond that way to it when we show more of it and everything.
Yeah, I've seen those lines at PAX East. Yeah. I've seen how you've had to cap them after a while with it, like drawing of a sad little creature for, you know, the people who can't make it. I'd love to know how much you use the feedback that you get from the people that play it. It must be like having a billion beta testers.
It kind of is. I mean, a lot of it is observational for us. I mean, we don't, because I think it's hard to kind of get honest feedback from people who've waited for a few hours to play your game. You know what I mean? It's people who are inclined to like it. So certainly we observe and take notes on how people play and places they may or may not get stuck, or places where we need to fix the UI here because it's obviously not clear because people don't know what to do at this part or things like that. It's always very valuable for us to see people finally, you know, get their hands on the game. This game, we've actually done a little bit of testing externally before we showed it for the first time, which is different from either of our other games. So I think we didn't learn quite as much this time because it was like more fixed when we showed it, like the issues that would have come up. But yeah, it's certainly really valuable to get it in the hands of, you know, a few hundred people or 500 or so people over the course of a weekend.
Oh, for sure.
You know, that's definitely very, very good learning for us.
This is a way bigger game. You guys just keep raising the bar game after game. And this one, well, it has a lot more moving parts. I mean, literally, because there are more characters. And so I'd love to know what sort of extra challenges that created for you with the music.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a very different beast from the games that we've done before. I mean, it's just a kind of an entirely different type of game, and the focus is different, and the way you interact with the world and the way you engage with it is totally different. So we've been trying a lot of new things in terms of implementation musically, for sure. I know that I've been experimenting a lot more with dynamic music and multi-channel pieces and stems that are based on various game states. So it's going to be a really, hopefully, my hope is that it will be a much more, you'll feel like you are more, as a player, connected to what's happening in the music, and that it's in a large part driven by how you're playing and what you're doing at that moment.
That sounds amazingly challenging.
It is. It's super weird. It's a weird challenge compositionally, because my approach in the past has basically always been to just sort of make a piece with an arc, and, you know, that is however long it is, and that it can loop, and part of how I would achieve the arc is a really simple technique of just, you sort of add stuff and remove stuff, you know. I mean, it's pretty straightforward, right? It gets bigger when you add more things, and then it gets smaller when you take them away, and that creates an arc, you know, sort of, if without doing anything else, you can just do that and you'll have an arc to your piece. project, because we have most of our pieces are multi-channel and have stems that are controlled by player input, I've had to sort of have, I couldn't really rely on that particular technique for building a piece, adding things and taking them away, because that's going to be dictated by what the player is doing, the addition and removal of stems, right? So a lot of my challenge was to make a piece that's sort of compelling when all the tracks are playing together, or when just one of them is playing all the way through, and it also feels like it has an arc. And it's been a very strange composing challenge for me, and I've really been enjoying it, and it certainly forced me to think about the process in a different way. Sure.
Well, and it's probably really helpful to come at it from a different way. I watched your composer's workshop that you did at MIT, and that was fascinating, because honestly, I have no idea really how you work. And so it was so interesting to hear you, you know, start with just a rhythm track and then keep adding things. And when you're working on something, does it, because you've got all these different options with, you know, starting with the rhythm tracks and all these different files and logic, does that help you get unstuck when you've got like writer's block?
Yeah, you know, it's there's all sorts of ways to kind of push past that, but writer's block is a funny thing, because I feel like it's partially made up. It's like a partially made up thing that doesn't necessarily you can always push through it if you just don't care if it sucks. You know what I mean? that's the thing about writer's block, is it only matters if you care whether or not it's bad. Because you can always make something. It's just, you know, you may have to fix it later. But so I've certainly gotten more comfortable with not being great right away. And just getting the idea out. And once the idea is there, it's a lot easier to refine something, I think, creatively. Like, once it's already there, then you can start refining it and tweaking it and fixing it. And that's more of a technical process. So it requires less of your creative juice, so to speak, for me at least, to do that. Once you can push past the initial sort of pulling something from nothing out of the universe into, you know, and get actually something created, that you can start to work with, that becomes a lot easier for me.
I love how you develop the music at the same time the game is being developed, and you guys have concept meetings and you come up with concept music. And how much of that, well, I suppose it's different with every game, right? How much of that actually ends up in the finished game?
Yeah, well, so far basically all of it has ended up in the game, but there have been times when I've gone back and kind of repaired a piece, you know, that I did, and it was an idea and it wasn't quite there. And I went back and kind of fixed some pieces, but pretty much everything I've made has made it into the game in some form or another. We don't have like a lot of, we use like every part of the animal, you know, sort of how we snout to tail game making.
Well, from what I've heard of the tracks in the trailer and the first 20 minutes or so of Pyre, you've got this wonderful kind of open, Lonesome West sort of sound, a little bit kind of a throwback to Bastion. Is that kind of a clue to where we're going to go in Pyre?
I'm not sure that it is. I mean, my sort of, the way that I rationalize the music style, this game's interesting because I feel like I have a few different states in this game in a way that I haven't really had in Bastion or Transistor. So I've got kind of like a different approach musically to each state. And the state when you're sort of traveling the world, the thing that I have set up for myself that I want to make is I want to lean pretty hard into the like classic rock fantasy thing, like the Led Zeppelin, you know, that kind of vibe.
Yeah, no, I was really picking up on that. It's so cool.
And that stuff is really stuff that I enjoy a lot and is sort of more maybe what I would like have listened to a bunch in my life, more than any of the other stuff I've made for games, which is fun to be able to do something like that. And it's maybe less mashup-y than some of the other music I've made. It's more straightforward in a way, which I find kind of refreshing and compelling for different reasons than I've found working on the other music to be compelling. So yeah, it's certainly been really a lot of fun for me to be able to do that. And then the music, when you're in the actual rituals, is sort of a different approach, and it's more kind of over the top and mystical and weird sounding.
When the stars align, the rites shall come to bear, illuminate the signs, the exiles shall be.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting to hear it in all those different contexts. And you know, just about every composer I've talked with didn't intend to be writing music for games, including you.
Yeah.
And so I'd love to know, you know, what it was like when you were very first working on the music for Bastion, what it was like to kind of be on the other side of the screen.
It was super strange for me because I had grown up loving and playing games forever and loving game music from a lot of different games growing up, and I never understood how that process came about, how games were made at all. I had basically no understanding of how games were made at all, and let alone an understanding of how music got put into a game. And I just didn't have any idea of any of that stuff. So I sort of had to jump in, you know, kind of dive in headfirst to working on Bastion. And it was really, there was a learning curve for sure for me. The music implementation, we really approached it very simply in Bastion because we didn't have a lot of options. We were working with a free kind of underpowered middleware platform. So basically couldn't really, you know, you could basically loop tracks. So that was pretty much the extent of the power of that software. So I just made stereo tracks and we put them in, and you know, the level designers Greg and Amir, they kind of started and stopped them when at the appropriate times, and you know, that was it. So I was just, as far for me, practically speaking, it was just me doing my thing that I had done, which is just making a piece of music and rendering out a stereo file, and that's the music, you know. So that didn't change much, but it certainly, I learned, I think I had more of a steep learning curve for the sound design stuff that I was doing, because then I really had to dig into the middleware and try to, you know,
oh, yeah.
have sounds play in a particular way when something specific happens in the game, and you know, and all that stuff is, I had a lot to learn there for sure, and I'm still learning.
Well, I think what's so, the real challenge with making a game is you can start from, you have to start from nothing and create this world, and so especially with sound design, it must be a really interesting aspect of what you do, because the sound is, well, obviously so important in the game, and you don't want to like mess it up with footsteps that sound bad or bad weapon sounds or that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. That is definitely a big part of what I do, and I think practically speaking, you just make sounds for what obviously needs sound right away, and you're like, oh, that needs a sound, that for sure, all these things need sound, let me go do that, and then you just sort of keep doing that. As things start to have sounds, then other things obviously need sound, and you're like, oh, that needs sound, so then this needs a sound, and eventually it's like, well, anything visual that happens probably needs a sound. So you go back and you just, you know, and you just try to make, you know, make the sounds be appropriate for the visuals and reinforce the tone of what's happening and the tone of the place and the, you know, and have, and as long as it sort of meets the requirements of those different aspects, then you're probably okay.
Yeah.
Has been my experience, but of course there's a lot more that goes on, but that's sort of the basic question and answer that happens is what needs sounds you know, you go make them what else needs sounds. You just keep doing that. Yeah.
Do you go out like outside and listen for interesting songs, or do you create them all kind of in your studio?
It's a mix of things. I mostly use library sounds that I modify, or I do some recording myself fully. I do a little bit of that, and I do some, you know, stuff with synthesizers and things like that in my software that I use. But yeah, I would say it's a mix, but sort of mostly library sounds that I then will modify and put effects on and combine with other sounds.
Yeah, well, that's the cool thing, because nothing needs to sound the way it does originally in real life, because you're able to just really mess with it. And the sound design and the music in Transistor was just amazing. That is such a gorgeous game. And
thank you so much.
Yeah, it's just, I love looking at it. And the soundtrack that you created, honestly, you know, I could hear that as the soundtrack to Fritz Lang's Metropolis, really. I mean,
that's awesome. That's really cool.
You know, I think the really neat thing, and the thing that you've done with Bastion and with Transistor especially, is really incorporate songs, because most games don't do that. You know, it's just this instrumental music that plays at key moments or not. But because Red is such an interesting character as a singer, the songs just add so much to her story.
Thank you. Definitely, that's something that we wanted to try on Bastion. I knew that it was an ambition I had, because part of the approach to that game was just kind of assessing the skills of everybody involved with making the game and like leaning into those things and just doing those things as best we could, because we, you know, it was a really small team. We had 7 people on Bastion, and part of it was just, what can we all execute? And my background is, you know, I have a songwriting background, and that's sort of where I'm the most comfortable. And so I knew I wanted to try and include some songs. And, you know, I myself and some of the other people on the team had definitely been impressed by games like Portal and Plants vs. Zombies and things like that had used songs to good effect.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ambitions that we had was to try and use it in a way that wasn't just silly and wasn't just like end credits music, you know?
Yeah.
To try and actually incorporate it into the fabric of the game and reinforce emotional beats with it and maybe do some things like that. And that was part of the hope. And so, and for Transistor, we did wanted to kind of push on that even more, and try and do it, really kind of weave it into the fabric of the game and make the music more interactable and feel like you're more inside the head of the performer of the music, you know. That's sort of the goal.
twisting and tying.
Yeah, no, it totally worked. And man, that ending. I mean, it's operatic, really. I mean, it's so cool. And
awesome.
Ashley Barrett, oh my God, she's just got the most amazing voice. I mean, I could hear her doing a kind of a torch song or blues, that kind of thing. And I know you worked with her in Bastion. It must be really fun to write songs for her.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, she did such a fantastic job on Bastion and Transistor, and I'm working with her again. You can hear her in the trailer music for Pyre, actually. But yeah, she's fantastic. We kind of grew up both in the Bay Area and didn't really know each other growing up, and met in New York. We were both living there. Worked on. I had her. We had a bunch of mutual friends, and one of them recommended her for a project I was working on. And I was really impressed with her voice. And when I was doing Bastion, I thought, geez, whose voice is going to be exactly right for this? And it was her. Yeah, it was definitely. I feel glad that that we went that direction.
Yeah, definitely. Well, did you or the devs in the studio kind of tweak the character of Red to be more like Ashley in any way?
I don't think so. I think it's not the character of Red. You know, I think it has more to do with the writing of the music. I wanted it to serve Ashley's abilities well, you know, so mm-hmm. I think maybe that had some influence on how I wrote the music. But as far as the character itself, I don't know that was something we were trying to do. Mm-hmm. But because we had this sort of concept for who Red was, and I think we stayed pretty true to that over the course of the development.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of the things I was wondering about is because the games have a multi-year development cycle, are you able to go back and tweak music, you know, when you get closer to the shipping date? Are you still making changes to the music, or do you pretty much just let it go the way it is?
Well, it depends. Sometimes, yeah. I mean, there's some music that, you know, for Bastion, the actual name of the music that you hear in town, which I believe is In Case of Trouble. Is that the one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
It's In Case of Trouble. That one, the file that got shipped with the game was called Town Music Rough. Like, that was my, like, my first pass at the town music. We stuck it in like as temp, and then it just like shipped.
Oh no.
So, and it was like, you know, it was like 18 months before the game shipped or whatever. So some of it, yeah, I mean, some of it, we just kind of like it the way it is and we keep it. And some of it, if it needs tweaking, I'll go back and tweak it a little bit. I certainly, there's time for that. And I have revised pieces for sure. In sort of, maybe it's just a mix tweak here and there, or maybe it's, you know what, this piece really needs some more help with the arrangement, and I'll go back and tweak it a little bit. And it's fairly easy to do that stuff now, the way our workflow happens. But yeah, I've definitely, on Transistor, I kind of later in the project, I went and like I said, I had a few kind of demo pieces that weren't exactly right. Like, I made them right after Bastion, and they still had a little too much of the Bastion vibe, you know. So I went back and kind of cut that out and made them more fit with the tone I'd established with the music for Transistor. And I did that kind of late in the process.
One of the ones from the Transistor soundtrack that really stands out because it's so different is Sandbox.
Oh yeah,
it's that got that kind of tropical sound going on.
Yeah.
I would love to know what some of your cultural influences are for the game, because they're definitely turning up in your soundtracks.
Yeah, man, there's a lot. For Transistor, I'd say Imogen Heap was a real big influence for sure. Bjork, Radiohead, stuff like that, DJ Shadow, and Kings of Convenience, I guess. For some of the, are you familiar with them? They're really cool.
I haven't heard them, honestly, but now I'm going to check them out.
Yeah, what's that album called? It's called Riot on an Empty Street. Maybe that's a song title. It's really good. I think it's from 2007 or 6 or something. But yeah, they have a few albums. That's the one I'm really familiar with. Anyway, they're great, and it's just like a kind of a folk duo where, yeah, it's really good. But they do a lot of nice kind of nylon string guitar finger picking stuff that made its way. Like I looked at that for some of the Sandbox music.
Yeah, Yeah, it's just, it's really interesting sound. And then in Bastion 2, you've got a banjo in there. And you know, from what I've learned about the studio, Supergiant Games, you know, it almost seems like it's just such a great environment to make games because, you know, some of you guys are childhood friends and or at least longtime friends. And so I'd love to know, you know, what's your favorite part about working in that studio?
There's a lot of things I really love about it. You know, it is awesome to be able to work with people that you've grown up with and have a great relationship with. And it probably my favorite thing generally, which is encompasses a bunch of other things, I guess, but is that the fact that everybody respects everybody else's work so much and everybody's so good at what they do that it's really cool to just have everybody kind of in charge of their thing and then just be excited when you see whatever they come up with, you know. That's really awesome and a really fun part of what we do is just to be constantly impressed by everybody else.
Wow. That sounds way more fun than being just a worker bee at EA or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah. I mean, certainly I know a few of the people who co-founded Supergiant, you know, that was sort of what they were doing before Supergiant. So yeah, I'd imagine it's a contrast for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Oh man, well, Darren, it's been really fun to talk with you about it. We're just so anxious to get to finally play Pyre. I know it's going to be a while, quite a few months still, but
yeah, we got a ways to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully, it will, you know, meet or exceed expectations. That is the plan.
I'm sure it will. So, thanks so much.
All right. Yeah, my pleasure.